We'd like to start this morning, and we're thinking of God's true children. Good to identify who God's children are, their characteristics, their nature, as those united to God and who know and walk with Him. So we're going to look at the first chapter and a summary of it really today. The book begins in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. Indeed, the first of three besiegings of the city. Nebuchadnezzar only became king in his own right in 605 BC. And that's exactly the time that's referred to when we are told it was in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim that Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians came to besiege the city. They did so partly successfully, as indeed the next two verses tell us, that the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. Now how was it that things came to such a place? Well, I want to just give you a little bit of the background and the history. Of course, we're told clearly why, no matter what army Jehoiakim could have raised, no matter what weapons he may have had, he could never have been successful. He was doomed to failure, as was the whole nation. And we're told why. For the Lord, verse 2, gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Look, let's just make a very simple application here. Your life, as the lives of everyone in the world and all the powers that be, are in the hands of God. If the whole world is with you, and you have everything you could ever ask for or wish, if God is against you, you're doomed. You ultimately will have nothing. He decides. He chooses. Jehoiakim, well, he had formed a pact. He thought he could make pacts with other nations. And he would stand. He'd abandoned God. Now God hands him over. So look, young people, or non-Christian, unconverted person, get yourself right with God. You're on a loser. You're doomed to destruction. There is no possibility that whatever you have in this life will ever, ever compensate you for what you're going to lose and what you must endure as an enemy of God forever and ever. That's it as plainly as I can put it. The Lord gave them over, but there was a lead into this. In fact, Jehoiakim wasn't this man's, as it were, birth name. He got this rather grand name from an Egyptian pharaoh. A pharaoh who sought to give him this sop to win and keep his favor. He had defeated him. And he said, I'll let you remain king. Tell you what, I'm going to change your name. His name was Eliakim. That's what he was known as. But Pharaoh Necho said, I now will give you a new name. But I'm going to give you a name that's consistent with your faith. I'm going to let you keep that. He didn't like the Babylonians did. And you'll see the difference. And I'm sure you did notice that already from what I've said. As to how they treated Daniel and his three friends. They gave him names of their gods when they changed the names of the young boys, the men, young men. Not this Pharaoh. He wanted to keep Eliakim, changing his name to Jehoiakim, Jehovah, title in there, name of the God of Judah, God of Israel. He wanted him to remain in place. And he thought this was the way to do it. I've got a fight. I've got a campaign running. If I can placate him now, I've sort of overrun them. I don't want them behind my back coming, helping those that I've got to engage with and fight still. So I'll place this puppet king and I'll let him stay in place and he'll be beholding to me. Again, just a simple application. That's the way the world works, friends. It'll allow you so much. It'll give you so much. You can keep in measure some of your religion. Keep in measure some of your spirituality. But of course in time, it'll rob you and it'll strip you bare. And when you make a pact with some particular aspect, some particular sin, you be sure that more are on the way. And that's what this man had to learn. So I want to just turn you back just for a brief moment. Let me just give you the history. When the godly King Josiah died, king of Judah, the next in line to succeed, and this man here, Jehoiakim, was a son of Josiah, but he wasn't the eldest son. He wasn't the one legitimately to have succeeded, but the people, for some reason, rejected the one that was to be appointed or should have been king and chose him. Chose Jehoahaz, another brother, not him. But he only reigned for 3 months before this Pharaoh Necho comes along. He conquers Judah and he makes this Jehoiakim the king, who was the next in line to Josiah. So you can see him reasoning, you should be king. I'm going to set you in place. You just pay your tribute to me. And he placed a tribute on the nation of 100 talents of silver and 1 talent of gold annually. You just kowtow to me. You just cooperate with me. I'll keep you in place. Again, you see how the world works, of course. He had forgotten and abandoned God, so now he was going to be treated well. You know, as a non-Christian, things might be going relatively well for you. As someone on the drift from God, it seems they're going well. We'll keep you in place. We'll see things go smoothly as we can make them. But that's only that you'll be destroyed ultimately. That's the end. But look, let me turn you to 2 Kings in chapter 23. 2 Kings 23. This is just by way of a lead in. Let's just read from verse 28 of 2 Kings 23. This is the history, the background to Jehoiakim arriving as the king. Now the rest of the acts of Josiah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? In his days, that is in Josiah's days, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went up against the king of Assyria to the river Euphrates. And King Josiah went against him. So he thought he would help the Assyrians against the Egyptians. So he ties himself in with the Assyrians. He goes out to fight and oppose Pharaoh. And King Josiah went against him. And he slew him at Megiddo when he had seen him. That is, Pharaoh slew Josiah. That's how Josiah died. He died in battle fighting Pharaoh Necho of the Egyptians. Verse 30. And his servants carried him in a chariot dead from Megiddo and brought him to Jerusalem and buried him in his own sepulcher. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz. Now he's also known as Shalom if you're reading this in another book. They took Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, and anointed him and made him king in his father's stead. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his fathers had done. And Pharaoh Necho put him in bonds at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem, and put the land to a tribute of 100 talents of silver and 1 talent of gold. And Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in the room of Josiah his father, and turned his name to Jehoiakim, and took Jehoahaz away, and he came to Egypt and died there. And Jehoiakim gave the silver and the gold to Pharaoh, but he taxed the land to give the money according to the commandment of Pharaoh. He exacted the silver and the gold of the people of the land, of everyone according to his taxation. He gave it unto Pharaoh Necho. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Zebudah, the daughter of Pedaiah of Rumah, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his fathers had done. Then chapter 24 begins with where we are in Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. So we're back to Daniel chapter 1. You've got, I hope now, the history as to how this man is the king when Nebuchadnezzar comes against Judah. We're told that the Lord gave him into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, and he took part of the vessels away with him from the land. Always, always a cost, you know, to spiritual adultery and alliances of the wrong kind. He rode in with the Assyrians against Pharaoh, that is Josiah, and lost his life in battle. And then this king, this son, is now appointed, and he is finding himself a vassal of the power that defeats him. So I want to make just some application, and much of it will be familiar to you, as I'm sure. But down to verse 3. So this is the first of the 3 besiegings of Judah by Nebuchadnezzar. He was called away after the first one for a couple of years to engage in another battle, and then he would come back again, and then he would come back a third time, and the third time completely waste the land. So he besieges Judah on 3 occasions. The first one, he takes away vessels from the temple and puts them in the treasure house of his god. And the chief god of the Babylonians was Marduk, if you're looking at a name. So in verse 3, the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, skillful in all wisdom, and cunning, and knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. Now, why were they going to do that? And you notice, the world wants the elite. They want the best. Or let's apply it another way. They want the best of what you have, whoever you are. They want to take your potential, your wisdom, your skills, and they want to mold you, and they want to shape you, and they want you to be contributors to this world. That's what this is all about. It's a rather clever way of maintaining the empire. Nebuchadnezzar commands his chief eunuch, now make sure you bring back the best. The wisest, the smartest, the elite of the young people, because we're going to school them, we're going to instruct them, we're going to educate them, and by the way, they'll be greatly rewarded for everything they do. They'll have the best. You know, they'll want for nothing. If they just play ball with us, we'll educate them, we'll instruct them, we'll teach them. They'll be part of this empire. They'll contribute to the empire. They'll lose all their distinctiveness. They'll not want to know about Judah again. We'll reward them and make it worth their while if they comply. Now, they haven't met Daniel and his three friends yet, because he isn't going to go along with this, because he's a man. He's a young man, well, young teenager. And he's of sterner stuff. But most will. We're beat anyway. We're defeated. Let's make the best of it in this land. Can't you see the reasoning? We'll have the best of education. We will be tops. We'll be in the courts of Nebuchadnezzar himself. We'll help maintain his empire, but we will want for nothing. The world's at our feet. Young people, isn't that what the world says to you? Isn't that what constantly is being held out? Work hard, and so you should. Study well. Don't bother about religion, though. Certainly not evangelical and biblical religion. Don't worry about God. Give yourself to what you have. After all, you're only here for a little while. Make the best of it. Be the best that you can be. Get your degrees. Get an education. Get qualifications. Get the best job you can possibly get. Maybe even get up the top of the ladder there. And you know, just live for what you can get here. When you're dead, you're dead. No thought for God. No thought for your soul. Nobody warning you. There are consequences to living without the Lord. Of never serving him, never knowing him, never lifting a finger in his cause. There are consequences to that. Well, lots of the young people must have went along with this. They would be rewarded for it. So you see, the master of the eunuchs, he gets the best. children, verse 4, in whom there's no blemish, well favored, skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge and understanding, science. They've got great potential, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and tongue of the Chaldeans. But it was all about themselves. They weren't doing this just out of the goodness of their heart. Let's have an education program for these poor, benighted and uneducated Jews. This was about themselves. That's what the world's about, young person. Unsaved person. They want to take you and they want your talents and skills and ability, and they may even, to as much as it's possible, make it worth your while. You get big money. You get a good job, you get property, you can buy yourself a house. Everything's presented before the young people of the world. Never a thought for God at all. That's the whole purpose in this. And so verse 5, and the king appointed them, look, already it's begun, they'll get the best of everything. But remember, young people, if you're doing well and the world's smiling on you and you're achieving and you're succeeding, it's feeding you on its diet. And that's what was to happen here. So the king appointed them, verse 5, a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar. These are all names that are related to their gods, of course. And to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and Azariah of Abednego. You'll have the best fare. You'll have the best chefs. They'll be cooking for you. You just eat this diet. But of course, that's to obliterate their Jewish distinctiveness. It wasn't just about the food. He hadn't clicked some, the Babylonians that is, their chefs hadn't come up with some wonder, seeds or pulses or meats, you know, that would be brain food. They weren't advanced in diets and all the rest of it. No, this was about destroying Jewish distinctiveness. Undoubtedly, some of the meats, some would say they were always offered to idols. Some may well have been things that under the law were forbidden for the Jews to eat. But way down there, hey, who cares, who knows? Just get on with it. But not Daniel and not his friends. Verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Now I'm just going to run a couple of applications together here, just for speed. But it takes guts, just put it simply that way, to stand up and resist what the world is trying to do. You never do it alone. You'll never succeed if you try to live an upright, godly life, a life pleasing to God, and multitudes are still trying. All they're doing is living an outwardly moral life. That's not a godly life. But it does take, if you're a professing young Christian, or even older Christian, It takes guts to stand up and say, I'm not going to feed or eat the diet the world feeds me. I'm going to reject that. I'm going to resist that. It'll set it down. It'll be appealing. It'll be the best you can get. Whatever this diet of the world, it's worldliness. It's pleasures. It's very, very, professing Christian, it's very, very diluted faith and Christianity and standards. It'll flood you with those, diluted to where you can hardly tell the difference from the world and the Christian itself. That's what it promotes. That's what it wants young Christians in particular to be eating and drinking. Take the diluted version, the diluted diet, mixed worldliness with some faith and some walk with the Lord. That's its desire. That's what it does. And that's the attempt here. And it takes a bold and a godly young man, young woman, to stand up and say, I don't want it. I will not have it. I want God's best. I want God's food. I want the diet that God will feed me. And you know something? Here's a marvelous encouragement to you if you're bold enough to live more spiritually. Closer and closer to the Lord. Walking the old paths, the old ways, well-worn, well-trodden, proven paths by those that have gone before us, who, like a dear sister whose funeral we attended on Friday, walked, lived for the Lord, and the testimony she left behind is encouraging and marvelous to read and see. Former pupils of this teacher, fellow teachers, people in the neighborhood, what a testimony she had. She didn't have a watered down, a diluted form of faith and Christianity. She wasn't a half-hearted Christian. She was out for the Lord. And it was a blessing to be there and hear some of these things that she would never have spoken of or mentioned herself. But you see, Daniel, look, purposed in his heart. He said, I will not. I'm not going to. I'm going to walk with my God. What boldness. What a testimony. He's 13 or 14 at most. And his friends, no doubt. Young people can do this. Those that have faith in Christ and walking close to their God, being strengthened and helped. You can do this even as the youngest of Christian. You can stand apart from the world. And listen, you can prove him. I thought this was marvelous, isn't it? When, look at verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Oh, I loved that as well. He must have had a great testimony, this young boy, this young man, this teenager, and his friends. They brought what? He brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. We've got a very perverted idea of somebody loving someone of the same sex. You can do that with all the perverse and the twisted and the gross and immoral that we have now. This young man wins the respect and the affection and even the love of this eunuch, this man who's placed over him. I'll tell you what he mustn't have been. Apologies if you're a teenager. We've all been there. So if you're older, don't boast and don't think this didn't apply to you, but he mustn't have been the stereotypical teenager. Well, one, he's different because he has real faith. That's really what sets you apart. Whatever age you are, you can be a Christian at 4 or 5 years old. You can be a Christian at 80 or 90 years old. Just come to faith. That's what will make you different. That's what will change your nature. But he mustn't have been a stereotypical teenager. You know, he didn't know everything. Not yet. He knew a lot. They knew an awful lot. I suspect when he bounced out of bed in the morning, way down there, how would you have been? How would you have felt? You had a smile on your face when Babylonians greeted you and this man who's over you. Well, if you smiled, you probably would have done so because you had to. It would have been so disrespectful, you might have got a beating or worse. No, I suspect he could smile anyway. I suspect Daniel and their friends were very respectful. I suspect they were quite obedient, compliant in those things that were not or didn't demand compromise in their faith. The first time they're challenged to, they say no. Very respectfully, but no, we will not. I don't think he was a moody teenager. You did, you know, one day he got the best and I said, don't talk to me. Faith makes you different. If you know the Lord, you know that old moodiness and that comes. And yes, there's a lot going on in life for teenagers and we're conscious of that. But you know the old fallen nature, it manifests itself. No, he had won the affection of this man. Genuine, pure affection. Wonderful relationship he has. Yet, he refuses to eat, and he does this. And I'm going to put a challenge to you, young or old. You do what Daniel and his friends did. You put this to the test, and it was putting the Lord to the test. And what faith he has, he says, we're not going to eat that. But I'll tell you what, you just give us your vegetable soup and water, and then you give us a certain time, and you look, tell you that's faith. This young man knows, I'm going to stand for the Lord here, and you know what? I'm absolutely convinced, he will come good. He will be with us. He will bless us, for he blesses those that honor him. He certainly will honor. You look at us in whatever days you like, and we'll be the best of them. He was convinced of it. He said, no, you give us, look, verse 10. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. I can't refuse to give you this. Why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort, all the others? You're going to be so weak and sickly on a diet of vegetables and refusing the best of the meat and the best of wine. Then said Daniel, verse 11, to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants. You just put it to the test, he said. I beseech thee, 10 days. There we go. 10 days. It's just a short-term trial. And let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon, our faces before you, and the face of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, you deal with us. Let's see who comes out best. You look at them that are taking the king's diet, and you look at us who are getting the vegetable soup. Of course, you know the outcome, and there it is before them. He consented, verse 14, and proved them 10 days, and at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Then Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. And you notice something in that? They didn't just temporarily go on this burst of vegetable soup and refusing the world's diet. A lot of young Christians, a lot of Christians start. And Owen fits and starts, they're particularly keen. And they eat the diet of the Lord and they're feeding on it. But it's only for 10 days. But when this man took away the king's fare, they consistently eat the soup and the water. He didn't change his mind. Daniel didn't get a year into this and say, I'm a bit sick of the soup. What about you? Azariah, Meshach, Abednego. Only he wouldn't have used their bad names. He would have called them Hananias and the other names. How about you? Are you sick of it? When you get tired of that same old diet, soup, 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 water, water, water. No. It's God's food. We are honoring Him. We stood by this. We made a start. We're going to go on. Wonder where you are, Christian. You started well. You fed, you were hungry, you had such an appetite for God's diet, for the things of God, but you know the diet's changing. You're getting into the world's diet. Fast food. Convenient food. Bible reading dropping off a little bit. Some of the attendance at the meetings dropping off a little bit. Prayer life dropping off a little bit. Commitment. Resources. Oh, you can give them to this and that. A time's gone, really. But you know, I noticed something interesting. It's about myself as much as you. But you know what I see, I think, or sort of listen to myself and my own reasoning. And I'll stop here. It's amazing how we get to be weary of the things of God. And how it's anything we do for God that causes all the problems. You ever notice that? So you're busy. So we're running all over the country, here to there, doing this for him, this for her, helping this, doing this. Then we have to come to a meeting. Oh dear, I couldn't possibly go. That's the nail in the coffin. It's that last little bit that we have done or were asked to do for the Lord. And that's the bit that's going to cripple us. That's the bit that's going to put us in the grave or in the ground or exhaust us. Did you not think it might have been the 101 other little things before it got to the time for the Lord's work? I'm broke. I'm in debt. So I don't give anything to the Lord's work. I couldn't. I'm broke. Why are you broke? What about this you've bought? Why are you buying this? Why are you buying that? Why are you getting this? Why are you getting that? Why are you putting yourself in debt for that? Why are you maxed out in your credit card for all these other things? But that £1, that measurely fiver, that's going to break me. Why don't you give the Lord the fiver first? Then see what you've got left to do what? Is that not putting first the kingdom of God and his righteousness? Apply this in anything. And you see, that's the way the mind works. Isn't it? You know, I'm tired and weary. Why are you tired and weary? Well, because I've got so many other things to do, and we appreciate that. And that's a real problem and difficulty in these times. But remember, it's always, you know, the world always charges us and always asks the Christian these questions. They never find fault with anything else we're doing. But if somebody's a bit run down, you see, that's you Christians. You run people into the ground. You see, what else are they doing all week? What have they been doing the other 6 days of the week? And if you just but knew, they'd have been here, there, everywhere. They'd have been in the wee small hours in the morning. Then they come so tired on a Lord's Day to worship him. Oh, I'm so tired. This Christianity's hard stuff. Go to your bed. Have a sleep. Why are you up to the little hours in the morning? No, he maintained this. It says he took away their food after the 10 days. He didn't offer them. They had made their stand. They had proved their point. They had proved, more wonderfully, they had proved the Lord. They had honored him. And he blessed them and he honored them. You put the Lord first. You eat the diet that the Lord set before you. You get committed and more involved. And look, the night is coming when no man can work. You've got one little life. You've got one little time to serve the Lord, and it's passing. And every day you miss opportunities to serve and commit yourself to the Lord, every day you don't, it's gone. It's past. You never get that time back. If you're not a Christian and you're still hoping it'll happen one day out there, get serious. Get praying now. Call upon the Lord. Ask him to save you. Make you his own. Change you. So you'll be able to stand up and resist your peers. Resist the intimidation of the world. Come with us. Look what the rest of the class does. Look what we're involved in. Be one of us. Don't be the odd one out. Well, you need backbone, you need strength, and it only comes from being united to him who has all power, all authority in heaven and earth, who has infinite strength, even the Lord, and he'll strengthen you, and you stand up, and you'll have guts, you'll have strength, and you'll take your stand for the Lord, and you'll never, ever regret it. Eat what the Lord gives. You know, it went on from there, and I have finished. It wasn't just in what they ate that he blessed them. If you read the rest down, it says, for these four children, God gave them what? Knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. He gave them more than just looking good and passing the test, physical test. He blessed them within. Mental alacrity. Ability. understanding, knowledge. He gifted them that. He gave them more than they even looked for. He'll do the same with you if you commit yourself to him and feed on the diet he sets before you. And he says, prove me. Daniel and his friends proved the Lord, and he honored those who honored him.